This upcoming concert season will be all about the boots, and Tecovas is your stop for the best in Western style. Tecovas has seasonal and limited edition offerings this spring and summer, including men's and women's boots, apparel, hats, bags, and more. All Tecovas boots are made by hand in a time-honored tradition with timeless styles that are always on trend. And Tecovas has first wear comfort with little to no break-in period. It's hard to find this level of comfort paired with this level of style. Stop by your local Tecovas store, have a complimentary drink or two, that's WCB style, and shop new styles. The smell of fresh leather and friendly staff are at your service. Many stores even have leather custom branding to make your boots truly personalized. And with regular live music and events, there's no in-store experience like it. If you can't make it into a store, just visit tecovas.com. That's T-E-C-O-V-A-S.com. They offer free shipping on all boots, as well as free returns and exchanges, and ship right to your door. Go to tecovas.com and find your new favorite pair of boots today.
Fishing like a local isn't just about catching fish. It's about connecting with the environment and the people who call it home. It's about hearing the stories and traditions that have been passed down for generations and sharing unforgettable moments with the people you meet along the way. Fishing like a local is having an experience that stays with you forever. And with Fishing Booker, you can experience it too, no matter where you are. Discover your next adventure on Fishing Booker.
Welcome to the fire.
Welcome to the fire, boys. My name is Parker McDonald.
And I'm Walter Lee, and we'll be your hosts on this episode of the Southern Collective Hunting Podcast. If you're a new hunter trying to learn the basics,
or you're a veteran woodsman just trying to get through your workday, there's always a place at our campfire for you.
Speaking of the fire, we would love it if you guys would join our growing Patreon community and be a part of the best and only digital deer camp south of Mason-Dixon Line.
Come on. If you'd like to learn more, click on the link in the show notes. But for now, Walt,
welcome to the fire.
All right, everybody. Welcome to episode 2 of the Southern Collective Hunting Podcast. Man, I was really nervous about saying that. I felt like I was going to say Southern Ground so hard. Like I knew I was going to say it, and here we are. I'm saying it again. This is not the Southern Ground Hunting Podcast, and this is not the Chasing Tails Podcast. This is the Southern Collective Hunting Podcast, episode 2. We've got a round table discussion. I'm just going to go around the table and name who's all here, and then I say let's freaking get into the meat and potatoes, boys. Does that sound good?
Let's do it.
Awesome. We've got Walter Lee here live from Tallahassee. Yes, sir. We've got Brett Mashburn live from somewhere in South Alabama.
Columbiana.
It's Brett Smashburn. If you could get it right, that would be
Smashburn. Brett's. Oh, man. We got Matt Reeves here from old Central Alabama, and our special guest of honor in this roundtable discussion. We got Mr. Splitshot. Y'all probably heard us talk about Splitshot before. He is a Patreon member, longtime Patreon member. How long you been on the Patreon, Splitshot?
I want to say over 2 years. A little bit over 2 years now.
Yep. So long time member. We've talked about this when we've talked about Patreon, about guys that are a part of this that are, you know, obviously not there because they're going to, they're not there because they're a new hunter. Splitshot is consistently just letting go of information to a lot of the new guys that are on there. People ask him a lot of questions. So, man, we're happy to have you here with us.
July 8th, 2021, by the way.
2021.
Mm-hmm.
Went back and looked. So, our special guest of honor, Mr. Splitshot. Glad you're here, buddy.
Thank you for having me.
All right, Walt, man. So, tell us, I'm gonna toss it off to you.
Yeah.
Because you are the one who kind of come up with this topic for tonight's discussion. I'm excited about it. These are some of my favorite topics. So let us know what we're talking about tonight.
Yeah. So tonight's a roundtable discussion. So one of the things we told you guys is we're going to start having these dialogues where we just take a topic and we just ramble amongst ourselves, giving you our opinions. And the idea is kind of crowdsourcing the answer to something that's talked about. And one of the things that's being talked about in the Patreon group is the idea of early season. So we're thinking like that early bow season window. Are morning or evening hunts better for you? And so I'm going to challenge you guys not to just say morning and in the conversation. When you go, pick one of those or both, but give a reason why. I like mornings because of fill in the blank. And let's try and get people thinking, because there's a lot of people like Todd. Shout out to Todd. We haven't given him a shout out yet on the podcast. Who's asking questions like this. And I think it's important to know the why. So I'm going to pick somebody at random to kick us off. And then we're just going to kind of bounce off of there, unless you guys are against that idea. Now that I've said it out loud,
I am not. All right. Do we have any housekeeping that we got to do before we get started on this?
Yeah, we probably should. You said you wanted to jump in, so I was going to find a natural segue down the way, but
I got ahead of myself, man. Like, yeah. I'm excited about this topic. We actually had another thing lined up.
Yep.
So next week it will happen. We had some just like pretty big emergencies and reasons why we couldn't have the conversation that we were originally planning to. And also next week, we're announcing a pretty sweet giveaway. But did we already announce that? I think we only announced it to Patreon members.
I think we said it on the podcast last week.
Did
actually.
We?
I think we did.
Well, yeah, I don't remember.
In the event we didn't, we'll make it really awkward for everyone listening right now. We really have our crap together on this podcast, but let's talk about a little bit of housekeeping. Like you said, we got to start with the Patreon group. This is the group that makes this thing happen, that you guys allow us to go out of state, have ourselves a good time, make some good content, bring that home to you guys, host hunts. That's the backbone of what that does. And you guys know the spiel by this point. It is a community. One of the benefits you get is you get added to the Patreon community, which is either a Discord group or a Polo group. And part of the benefits, one of the things we say thanks for is, or one of the ways we say things, I should say, is we give you a shout out on the podcast. And so we've grown by 18 in the last month. So I'm not going to bore you with like 18 names, but I'm going to do four of them real quick. And so I want to say thanks to Matt Baggett, Brian Bell, Connor Chandler, and Ben Graham. We're going to keep turning away at this until we get all caught up. But I just want to say thanks to everybody. And I also want to give you an update. I posted to Patreon and said that we had merch coming. We are like right on the cusp of having an ETA for when that's going to get here. And the hats, I'm going to tell you right now, I felt like Chasing Tails had some really cool hats we gave away. The hat that Parker and I have been working on, mainly Parker, and I've just been sourcing, this thing's a banger. There's no one giving out free hats like we are. So if you want in on that.
For a free hat, it's pretty sweet.
Yeah. Yeah.
Now we're going to have some expensive ones too at some point that are going to be expensive. And they're going to be sweet, and they're going to be, everybody's going to love them. Morgan Wallen's going to wear them, wear them. You know, it's going to be awesome. But so, you said we're on the cusp of having merch. We actually do have live merch that is live on our shop right now at SoCoHunt.com /store. And I think we got a new hoodie up there. We got the Deer Camp on My Mind shirt. Which is really, I made that for me. Honestly, it's like a metal scene kid shirt that also likes to deer hunt. That's kind of who I made it for. And then we got the pre-order on the Firebuck shirts that are gonna be pretty sweet too. The front pocket tees. So those are coming soon. So we actually do have stuff that people can order right now.
Did you mention the hoodie?
I did, but
okay.
You can mention it again because it's sweet.
There's a sweet hoodie on the website, and I cannot wait for mine to get here. I'm not going to wear it until January, but I've got one coming, so it's going to be awesome. I'll turn the AC down to like 60 and put it on and walk around the house. But yeah, I think we can take a break from the housekeeping, move into the podcast and get going. So I put everybody's name into a random generator, and Brett, you're going to go first. So to kick us off, the South Alabama legend himself, Brett Smashburn, morning or evening during early archery season? What's your preference and why?
Honestly, I'm torn on that because I love mornings, period. Like all season. I would say the success I have had in early season killing bucks has come from stuff that happened in the morning, but I killed them in the afternoon. So that's another reason I'm torn. Like I've seen bucks going into bedding areas in that morning coming back. And I figured out from knowing the area well enough, kind of how he was going to exit that area and set up for that afternoon, and was able to capitalize. I think afternoon's probably better for killing, but it's hard. I love mornings.
Brett, you hunt South Alabama, right? There's a very specific thing that people know about South Alabama, and that is that it's a freaking ton of pines. There's a lot of pines in South Alabama. You got some swampy stuff and some hard woods, but there's a lot of pines. And outside of acorns, I wouldn't imagine like where you are at. I know there's not a lot of agriculture.
Evening setup.
So for me, like when I'm thinking about that setup, I feel like mornings is the kill, right? Like that's where I would want to go in to kill, rather than evenings, because there's not a super consistent early season food source, right?
Well, I mean, a lot of what I'm hunting is all timberland. So it's SMZs, cutovers, and it's going to be just seas of planted pines. So typically my food source is going to be either where I find the bucks in the summer is the cutovers, eating all the new growth. And then as soon as that hard mass starts dropping your acorns, it's typically for me is not until the beginning of October. Yep. So I don't really have those weeks beforehand. You know, I got like, 2 weeks before season comes in when acorns are starting to drop, which is mainly water oaks and laurel oaks. And the laurel oaks, they don't seem to – they'll let them lay for 2 or 3 months typically before they hit them, unless that's the only tree dropping.
Is a laurel oak, is that the big giant ones?
No, like they're Indian real. The acorns are really small, real small. But the leaves look more like the old school mossy oak with the green leaf. It's kind of 3 inches long or so and slender, to where your water oak great looks example. More like
yeah, it looks
more
visual.
What would you call it? Like a club on the end of it, or
it's spatulated.
Like a boat tail. Like as it goes to the end, it gets bigger, like a shovel, basically.
So is it a white oak or red oak?
Red.
It's gonna be a red oak.
Yeah. Okay, so it's a red. Yeah.
Y'all are getting me excited. Y'all are in my field. Hey, come on now.
Look at here, Brett and I have toted these two bucks around all over the Southwest. Matt, you got these bucks over there with you?
Yeah.
Yes, he does. Look at him.
But so typically ahead, Matt, I'm looking for a water oak. But yeah, like I've killed tons of does in the mornings. But typically my bucks for whatever reason is coming in the afternoon, early season. And a lot of times it's because I've seen them doing something that morning, slipping back into bed and just doing that, or observation sit in the morning and
okay, what's your definition of early season, Brett? Like from what time to what time?
So for me, it would be the opener of bow season, which is October 15th most of the time. Up until, I would say, the beginning of maybe the first week of November. So probably 3 to 4 weeks, maybe, is all I'm considering early season, like the first 3 to 4 weeks of bow season. And after that, all the acorns are starting to fall, and it seems to be a little bit easier, because once the pressure starts hitting, I already know where the deer are going. Early season, they're a little more pushed out and hanging a little more closer to the food sources.
It's important. The reason I ask that is because, I mean, once it's Matt's turn, Matt's going to be talking about hunting early season in Kentucky in September.
That was, you know what I mean?
And so the definitions of early season are going to be pretty scattered, You know what I mean? Like for me, I'm going to be hunting that first week of September, but I know exactly what you're talking about. Where in here in Alabama, I mean, pretty much the rut's not till January, December, most places.
Yeah.
So, I mean, you're talking about months of early season time that you get. But the thing that's different, the thing that makes the South different to me for an early season conversation is that, our early season is not always all about acorns, right? Like part of the early season is, but also November is still early season activity, right? Like it's hard to compare it to other state. What our deer do in November, there's a few places that have November rut, but by and large, what our deer do in November is pretty specific. Like that's a month of time that's different from the rest of the country that I don't know that you could compare it with the deer behavior in any other part of the country. Does that make sense what I'm saying?
Yes.
What do you think, Matt?
Yeah. I mean, our deer are totally, I mean, we touched on it to begin with that we don't have ag. We don't deal with that. It's kind of a whole different realm of deer movement in say big woods or timberland, you know, areas. So you're going to have to hold tighter to those, you know, to those bedding areas and move from there. That's how I see it. Now, Brett, what I wanted to ask you and kind of what I've seen in my experience is I do tend to have a lot of more buck encounters, like you said, in the mornings, during the early season. I see them I don't know if that's necessarily because we're getting up closer to their bed or if we're catching them before all the pressure hits them. Because that's what we deal with constantly is pressure, pressure, pressure. As the season goes, they get educated. And a lot of people say, and I mean, me and you talked about it at the expo, your best move is in those first couple of days to get in his bedroom and try to kill him. And so, you know, I'll get on my take on Alabama, you know, or anywhere in the South of what's the best route of going to kill a buck in the early season, because there's a lot of different variations you can go about.
Yeah, I would say like in the mornings, like you're talking about, typically what I'm seeing is you're right, I'm hunting close to bedding and I'm trying to like maybe find some more isolated trees, maybe that's a SMZ or something. And basically what I'm seeing in the mornings is bucks going back into bed, like, you know, an hour or so within shooting light or right after shooting mm-hmm. light. And then I'm trying to play off of that. Like, what trail did they go in on? What did they go in a certain way? Cause the wind going to shift, and try to play that, to figure out where to hunt that afternoon to catch them coming out of that bed that afternoon and then try to kill them.
And Brett, we use a lot of cameras. So, I mean, we're constantly trying to see where these deer are moving and how their patterns change. So how many times have you had a buck, you know, he's doing his summer thing and then October hits, he's gone. He's doing something totally different. You have to pick up and make a whole new game plan to figure it out. But I think it can be easier to stumble upon a buck in that early season area, you know, just hunting, you know, whether it be historical sign, because you're not going to find a lot of fresh, you know, rubs and scrapes. I mean, they're still hitting their mock scrapes, kind of like how I run my cameras. But you got to be willing to move a little bit and continue to walk on your feet until you feel that spot where they're moving.
I would say, like, typically my camera setups aren't really set up for early season. I think that's a lot of reason why I struggle early season. But my cameras are already set where I know the deer are going to be when pressure gets put on. So I don't go in those areas once deer season starts unless I'm hunting. So my cameras are in there waiting for that shit. So I know when it happens. And once that starts happening, I'll start hunting the deer a little different.
Yeah. Yeah, that shift.
That shift? Is that what you said?
Am I?
Okay. Hating, Parker. So I also want to say, too, you know, Matt, a lot of the early season that you did last year and the pictures and the bucks that you've got on a lot of your private land is going to be largely dependent on that golden acorns that are sitting there. right? Yeah. Like, you're not trying to hide that from anybody. I think that does make a big difference, especially when you're talking about like that first week of the season. You know what I mean? Like that first week of season, Akron's maybe not dropping quite. They haven't shifted to that yet. And they're coming. I mean, I know a lot of people who are hunting private land that are killing bucks on that first week of season because they're coming.
Yellow acorns out.
Exactly.
Yellow acorns.
I think there's like when you're talking about early season and late season hunting, I think a lot of people hunt deer in the rut and they're hunting over the corn piles and wondering why they're not killing deer. And they're not hunting when it's hot and or when there's a lack of food. They give up by the late season whenever they need those corn piles, when they could really be killing some bucks. And then early season, oh, it's just too hot, you know. But the guys who are out there doing it are finding loads of success on corn in that first week. In the north, south, east, and west, like that's not even like deer are going to come to that, especially if they're not getting pressured and they're going to come to it in the daylight. Like that is going to be something that you probably see no matter what part of the country that you're in. If they're not being pressured and you've got corn out, like that's a good time to go kill them.
I'm curious, so, split shot. You're the only person we haven't heard from so far in this opening salvo. Do you have anything to add right now?
I would say that what they're talking about, really, you have to find the food source, whatever they're using at that time. Down here, if you're looking early season, I've found it to where exactly what Brett was talking about. It could be the laurel oaks. It could be your water oaks that are hot at the time. And it varies through the season. I have found some, this has been rare, but where live oak trees, like you'll have one random live oak tree that'll be dropping and the deer will just come over there and they'll check it out and eat a little bit of that. And then they'll move off to whatever their main food source is. The one particular situation I was thinking of was they were coming out of a bedding area of cabbage palms, or just real thick cabbage palms, and they were walking through these open ponds, and there was a live oak that was out there is isolated, and they would hit that live oak tree, and I'd set a ground blind up on it, and I would see a lot of deer morning and evening, but they were heading over into a cut over. They'd like go feed, and then they would make their way back in the morning times. So, I mean, you really could have sat there right there before dark, or you could have sat there in the morning. It was just finding that bed to food kind of pattern, and then being able to take advantage of another food source on the, you know, if you're hunting public in Florida, that a lot of people overlook is palmetto berries. And they're not in all the time, but it's something to just keep in mind. It might be the food source that they're looking for, muscadine vine. You just want to find that hot food source at the time and then be able to get in between it and the bedding area. And sometimes it's really close to a bedding. Usually these deer aren't wanting to move a whole lot during that time, especially your bucks. So that's kind of what I would add to it. It's not much different here. Our rut is a little closer because our season's, for me, is coming in around mid-September. And then our pre-rut is coming in, you know, anywhere from mid-October to late October. Like that's going to be like your best rut activity, so it's going to be different than what it is in Alabama for sure.
You made a good point on the cutovers. I was on a job the other day and ended up finding some bucks in a cutover bed, it went down, whatnot, but that new early fresh growth is one of the biggest food sources that you can find. And you were talking about an example where you had them moving through there to an isolated tree. That's key. And that can be very hard to find. And that's, you know, that's where you're walking and scouting in season, you know, in the early season is great. I had a spot that had two different timber cuts, two different age classes. And there was a creek that ran through the middle, and those deer were moving constantly from one to the other. One was a little thicker. That's where they bedded. One was a lot more fresh growth. It was a select cut pine stand, and it just had probably that summer's worth of growth. So there's so much, you know, honeysuckle, all kinds of little forbs growing out there, and they're moving back and forth. Now, there was a strip of white oaks in between both of those. So they were checking those white oaks as they were going to that other food source to figure out which one they wanted to go. So they had their initial route from their bedding to multiple food sources. It just depended on when they put it on the buffet and when they could start eating it. So these deer constantly, they know when these acorns are supposed to be dropping or when these yopons, you know, they can eat privet, all that stuff. They know when all those come into season. You've just got to find those trails that hit. If you can find the trail that hits all of them, just like I was telling you with the different timber cuts and the diversity, I think that's king for early season.
Dude, that everything that you're talking about, like you're basically saying these deer have set their whole lives up to move the least possible and be able to know when each thing, like they're crossing the path. That's yeah. why we consistently see these heavier trails. And you're for example, in Kentucky, there's a spot that I can think of right now that you're not going to see a deer more than likely in there until the acorns start dropping. You're mm-hmm. probably just not going to see a deer, but that trail stays pretty wore out because they're still a part of their, like if you were to hang a trail camera up there, you would have a ton of pictures of deer moving through there at night because they're still crossing over it. I just think that's a pretty interesting, like when you're talking about putting trail cameras up and getting stuck on nighttime pictures of deer, like why am I only getting nighttime pictures of deer? It's because that spot probably more than likely is only beneficial for one part of the season. Right. And we're just trying to figure out which part of the season it is. Like, is it late season, early season? They're going to be coming through there the whole time. But when it becomes their priority to get there is kind of when we're trying to look for.
Yeah.
So one of the things that I've noticed, and I'm curious if you guys have noticed this as well, in the years that I've ran trail cameras on hot feed trees early season, I have got deer hitting that tree all hours of the day, night, the whole deal. How often have you guys seen deer bed? I'm talking like underneath a hot persimmon tree. Cause I've got a lot of trail camera footage. I was going back after talking to Brett the other day about this. I've got a bunch of trail camera footage early season on food sources where that deer will be laying underneath that tree or within 20, 30 yards. Is that something you guys have encountered?
I've watched a Dave Owens video where he killed a buck on a persimmon tree. And I think maybe in the video that persimmon tree, it seems like it had just started dropping.
Mm-hmm.
But it tells you that buck was bedded close. I mean, he hadn't been bedded close by because he shot him in the morning, early season in Kentucky under that persimmon tree. I do believe in my limited trail camera experience last year, I hung one up on a persimmon tree. And that right now, like in August is when it was running, August and September. And there was bucks that were using that spot in daylight, consistently checking to see if it was, which tells me that they were bedded pretty dang close.
Right. How do you approach that?
Watch over
so if you run trail cameras this year, how would you approach your cell camera starts popping off with daylight photos? You think he's close by, are you hunting that morning or afternoon?
Morning. I'm going to choose morning every time.
Yeah.
Probably unless I'm in like Midwest, if I'm in Kentucky or somewhere like that where there's crops, then I might prefer evening. But even in those places, I still notice that my buck encounters, like mature buck encounters, always happen in the morning. A few of them in the evenings, you know, if you're hunting close to a bean field or something that's still green, you know, maybe. A lot of people do, but I know that I set up myself, like the spots that I gravitate towards are morning spots. Me and Brett, I think we're talking about that the other day. Like I just gravitate towards them. So that's probably why I consistently have success or not consistent success, but more success in the mornings than I do in the evenings.
Split shot, what you got?
A lot of what I find is it has to do with the area. Some areas are good for like morning, close to where that cabbage palm like bedding area was at. I would find the deer, they would come out more in the morning then, but they wouldn't move by me in the evening. And there's like some live oak trees that they were dropping real close one year. And I was just sitting right on the bedding area and I would have them come in. And Brett and I talked about this earlier, but they would come in and feed like in the middle of the day. And then they'd go right back in and go lay down. And then I've seen it to where last year when we were hunting on the Patreon hunt, the deer, they were definitely traveling to one area. I knew where the food source was, but they were bedded sporadically. So it was just a matter of them coming to that area and being able, you know, at that point, it was more of an advantage to hunt in the evening. I think you have to identify what the food source is and how the deer are bedding and using that area. Like you might have a major food source, like a, say like they're coming into a food plot to food, like to feed in the evening. And you know, they're going to come in there at night because of the cover and stuff, but you can set up just on the outside of it. And if you know where they're coming from, like consistent bedding, like they're going to use this one little bedding area, but you can set up between that. But if it's sporadic, then you need to be able to figure out, just hit the right spot. Sometimes like last year, when I was talking about that one was in a particular swamp and it was just an oak hammock in a swamp and the deer were coming in sporadically. And I knew like I was in the right area, but I didn't know where they're going to come from. So it was just a matter about putting the time in to be able to have that encounter with them. So I think you have to identify what the food source is, what the bedding is, and then approach it of, you know, is it sporadic? Do I need to put more time in this area or do I need to sit in one particular place? And, you know, should he be there that first day? It's going to be situational is kind of what I'm saying here.
Yeah. The deal you're talking about with midday, I think you were talking about split shot with some of those bucks.
Yeah.
That's what happened to me last year. I had a buck on camera that I figured out and he was moving through an area and he was typically moving around 1:30, 2 o'clock. It was pretty much 5 out of 7 days he was coming through there around that time. I went there and set up on opening day at 12 o'clock. I climbed a tree and set out in a cutover. And the sun beat me down all day. Didn't see anything. Well, a couple of weeks goes by, I pulled an SD card out of that camera and that buck come through there at 11:15 and I was in the tree at 12. I had just missed him. He'd come through early that day. But it was that midday movement, even early season, even though it's the hottest part of the day. And I see that a lot on my cameras, even when they're in velvet. When it's 100 degrees out, I get a lot of them in the middle of the day.
Why do you think that is? Like, what is it? Do you think it's a moon phase thing? Do you think it's a weather? Y'all both say, in your head. I don't know.
I mean, I was speaking, but I was going to say, I'm going to pass this off to split shot. I was going to pass this off to split shot because I think he's homing in on maybe what this reason is. So we'll let him speak to that.
Well, you're talking about this in the polo group and it was kind of more of a rut situation, but I see majority of my bucks, like mature bucks. And we're not talking does or like young bucks. Mature bucks, I see most of them in the middle of the day, like hands down. Like if I had one particular time to hunt, like if you said you got an hour to hunt, like I'm probably hunting 11 to 12 or in that, you know, maybe a little bit in front of that, maybe a little bit behind it. But what I think happens is if you notice during the day, like the thermals are heating up around that 10 o'clock time frame and you have your, I think the air is cycling. So if you ever notice like during the day, like it'll be a real calm morning. And then during the middle of the day, the wind will pick up. And I think the wind is just cycling. Like the thermals are creating a cycle. So now you have a wind, I guess, like a vacuum that's kind of happening around and it's starting to convey around. And maybe the deer have to get up and move bedding areas, and they're not really, or maybe I shouldn't even say bedding areas, they're just moving bedding to be able to find more of an advantage. And I think Now during the rut, like, it's going to be a whole different scenario because they're looking more for does. But even like during the early season, I see these deer getting up at this time because that's the only thing I could think is like it becomes an advantage. I'm at a disadvantage now. I need to move to a place to go for an advantage to, you know, because they're dependent on their nose, and that's going to all shift throughout the day. And as thermals are dropping and stuff, all that's going to change. So that's why I think they're moving at that time period is just because of that, the thermal shifting, and they have to go somewhere else. Now, if you can hit a food source that's off to the side of it, well, it's an advantage for them to get up and go. Go ahead, Parker. I see you waiting.
I'm messing with Brett. You're good.
Oh, I was going to say, I wonder if they're not getting up that time of a day, a split shot, you know, like you're saying, the winds blowing, the thermals are pulling, so you're getting a lot of turbulence, a lot of drafts, different winds happening. I wonder if they get up because they can actually detect predators, or they can just smell, but they can smell all around them because the wind's doing a lot of shifting around. And thermals are pulling to certain places, so they could go to those places to scent check stuff. Or maybe they just feel comfortable because they can smell better that time of day from multiple directions.
Okay,
I would say that.
All right,
it definitely happens during the rut.
Okay. For sure, that's 100% fact.
Okay, all right. So, I personally believe this is the most bulletproof hunting tactic that exists. I really do. Hunting wind shifts. I think if you know where a buck is, right? Like if for you cell camera guys that have used them and you know a buck is there, if you will just like sell out to the idea that I'm only going to hunt when the wind shifts to in my favor, during daylight hours. I've killed one really good buck on that theory, I guess. And then there's a video that I've got of a buck in Kentucky that I missed, but I missed him at like 10 o'clock. It was early season, and it was because of a wind shift. It was 100% because of the wind shift. I had an idea where I felt like a buck would be bedded at. And I hunted it knowing that wind was going to shift and I was still going to be good. And he was going to have to move through this area to get to the next closest good bedding point. And it just so happened to be a giant deer. And I missed him at 14 yards because I hit a twig. But I do believe, and I've seen it multiple times when people start telling stories about their bucks and it's like, man, and the wind shifted. And all of a sudden it was at, and you know, it was going straight in front of me. And then this buck comes in, like, that just seems to be a common story, right? Like wind shifted, buck started moving. So to your point, split shot, I believe that is like, no matter what time of the year it is, wind shifts are golly, I just can't stress it enough how much I think they work, like hunting those wind shifts.
So I would messing with Brett. He keeps raising his hand.
It is so hard to talk with you guys, like the freaking screen moving all over the place, everybody raising their jack on hand.
It's so funny that y'all talked about this. I don't know if y'all, I shouldn't plug another podcast, but I'm going to anyways. Latitude has a podcast with Jake Bush, and I think it's episode 15 or 16. He has Heath Cisco on. They spend it's episode 15, 20 minutes talking about all the big bucks that they've killed on wind shifts. And it's a really good listen. You guys should go pay attention. But I would postulate for you guys to tell me I'm either stupid or maybe there's something to it. Another reason why those wind shifts are kind of showing up with deer movement, especially early season, you have pockets of cooler air for those deer to hang out in. And by about midday, you start to see those pockets shift a little bit. Do you think there's a chance early season that you're not really seeing them getting up to wind check something or anything like that, so much as the areas that were really cool in the morning are no longer quite as cool and they have to move around just to feel comfortable? And that's why you're seeing them early season.
That could very much be a part of it. They move in places that you wouldn't think that they would move, though, sometimes. I see them, like we were talking about cutovers, like sometimes I just go out no cutover, and it's, you know, it's hot as all get out there, and then they'll just go out no cutover right during, like, the middle of the day. So
just like Matt filmed the other day. He just filmed, which, did you bump him up?
I don't know if I bumped him up. I saw him walk around the whole property line and then come back into the cutover.
Yeah, they looked like they were in the video. They looked like they were just out, just freaking doing their thing, just hanging out.
Yeah, I was going to say, I don't know. That's not what I see on my cameras. Like, they're shifting to maybe because one spot got hot and they're trying to find somewhere cooler. Because when I'm seeing them is out in the middle of like cutovers and places, it's hotter during the middle of the day. Like, it's hotter. I feel like they're just out moving that time of day. Maybe it's because they're conditioned to not seeing humans as much in the middle of the day. Maybe it's the shifting wind. But while Parker was speaking, something, yeah, it could be the moon. You never know. So while Parker was speaking, something came to mind. You know, I just talked about the buck that I knew he was coming through, and he came through earlier that day. It hit me when he was saying that. I was hunting a totally different place in bedding area because I had a northeast wind, and somewhere right there around 11 to 12 o'clock, the wind was shifting from the northeast straight out of the west. And that's why I was able to go hunt that spot. So I got in there fairly soon after the wind shift, but that deer obviously moved right when that wind shift happened, and I missed it. So that was a great point, Parker. Well, I just realized that.
Well, you know, I mean, even when you're talking about hunting food sources, you know, I think a wind shift around, you know, let's see, if it gets dark, let's say it gets dark at 7 o'clock and there's a wind shift around 6 o'clock, and you're hunting a food source, I think that's a great time to hunt a food source in the evening. In that case, I would say absolutely. I'd rather hunt the evening on that day if that's when the major shift happens, because I feel like the bucks that are coming into that food source in the nighttime, there's a better chance that they're going to hit it earlier. They're just going to go ahead and get up. It's dusky. It's close enough to dark. You know, that was what happened. It happened for me. Well, that the big buck that I killed in Alabama with my bow a few years back, it's the biggest buck I've killed in Alabama. It was the same thing, except it was a morning hunt. And, I knew that wind was going to shift, and it was going to shift in my favor. So I figured that that buck was going to stay closer to that food source until that wind shifted. And it did. I figured he was probably going to be on his way to bed when the wind shifted, and it did. And then he came right by me, when it shifted, like 10 minutes after it shifted. And I think that had a lot to do with it. Split shot.
Parker, something else that I noticed too, and this is throughout the season, is days where you have a big temperature drop. And if it's abnormally cool for early season, it seems like I'll see deer moving right there at that daylight kind of period, where maybe they're already normally back into their bedding area. But on those cooler days, it's like they feel good, so they just want to hang out a little bit longer. And you might catch them slipping back in before, you know, right there before, I don't know, before they would normally show up. Like, I see a lot of deer around 8:30 or whatever, but you might see them right there at daylight or maybe 30 minutes after daylight. It seems like that's pretty standard of happening too on the cooler days, but it's got to be a pretty big shift on the temperature or like abnormally cool for that period.
Well, you talk about fronts, right? I mean, a lot of times with a front comes a wind change, and we love hunting fronts. And I think, I wonder if it doesn't have more to do, obviously a wind or a cold front. We want those, right? Like we hunt those. There's different theories on whether they're great or not, but for the most part we hunt those. But a wind shift that happens with the cold front during hunting hours is always going to be better than an average day, I think. I mean, I see that all the time, because you're getting the benefit of the wind shift, where they're up and moving around and kind of trying to figure out, get their bearings on where they're going to hang out for the rest of the day. And you're getting the cold front or just the front in general that's getting them on their feet, right? Like that's also been proven. And so I think you're with what you're talking about. You're just kind of, that's like the best day to freaking hunt in the early season, you know?
Yeah, that first cold front in early season is the bomb. You get that first cold front during deer season, best be in the woods.
Especially if you got a hot feed. Come out. I got my best photos when I overlay temperature early season. If I can get up here, that little like high 50s dip, which doesn't sound like a whole lot, but it's monstrous here. And sometimes it happens late October. On hot feed trees, my cameras explode in daylight. I mean, they just explode. And I'll actually get no nighttime photos those days as well. But real quick, we're going to pause right here and we're going to do a little more housekeeping. And I just realized, Parker, I've got a giveaway announced today. Did I tell you about this?
No, you didn't. You didn't tell me.
The boys at Kanati who sent us arrows, when I originally made my purchase, I ordered zingers from them before they offered to make me a set of the most beautiful arrows I can't take my hand off while we podcast. So what we're going to do is we're going to give away to the Patreon members a 12-pack of their standard diameter zinger arrows. All you got to do is be part of the Patreon group.
Zinger so. Fletchings, not arrows. Do not false advertise here.
Zinger Fletchings. Jeez, you jumped on there. Parker has been threatened with legal action before. Did you see how fast he jumped on that thing? So Lord there it is. Fans. Z3s. We're going to give away. Tell you what, by next episode, we'll do a giveaway. It's just another one little way I can say thanks to everybody. And but we got a little more housekeeping to do. We got to thank the boys over at Tethered. We got a care package on the way, fellas. We had a good time up in Birmingham, and I just want to say thank you to a brand who has had our back since day one. Parker, you and I literally got in at the ground level way back in the day, and they have done everything they can and gone above and beyond to support the launch of both of our platforms and the launch of this new one. And so if you're looking for some of the best lightweight system saddle gear, you got to go check out Tethered. It's just, you don't get better people than that and or better gear. So
you said it when you said better people, man. I mean, there's a lot of good gear out there and there's a lot of good people out there, man. I've met a lot of great people in the saddle hunting world from all the different companies. You know, you were talking about Latitude, great guys, you know, all the other companies have great people, but what I know about Tethered is their number one priority is to give back to the saddle hunting community. Mm-hmm. And they prove that with the way that they conduct themselves, you know, at shows. I was talking to Bobby, you know, and Bobby's like, yeah, just keep it, man. They just like giving stuff away to people and making people's day. And that's just the culture that they have there. It's a generous culture, and they're generous with their gear, and they're generous with their information. Man, they've done so much for the saddle hunting world. And for me personally, I love the guys, man. They're awesome. And I love their gear.
Yep. So just wanted to take a moment and say thanks to them. We should have probably done that.
So anyways,
back to the podcast. I can't tell at this point because we dropped a rock in the water and the ripples just went everywhere. And I don't know where we sit. Matt, have you told us what your opinion is morning or evening?
Hang on. Walt. Yeah. I don't know what Brett's answer actually. What was your final answer, Brett?
I'm going to have to say morning. I love mornings for all deer seasons. So we'll go with that.
I said mornings. Matt?
We said this earlier. But
did y'all hear Matt's daggum bedtime alarm
that go wasn't off just me. Then? That was not
that was
me.
Mine. That was mine.
That was he's trying out the new baby toys. Let that kid open them when he's born. we were talking about, you know, I'm going early season in Kentucky. This will be a fun trip for me. Do you want me to hit base everything off that with a September 2nd? Okay. Start
let the Lord lead you, Matt.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. I feel like I gave my opinion with Brett's topic. So we're gonna go with kind of Midwest. I guess you can call that Midwest, but just from my experience, I'm gonna start off and I'm gonna say evening. That's gonna be my take because of beans and what I've seen going. if it's an opener or the opening week, I'm going to hunt morning and evening. It doesn't matter. I'm going to be in the woods trying to kill a deer. But what I was seeing in these morning hunts was I was walking in and I was bumping deer that were already bedded down. And I mean, I'm walking in, you know, an hour and a half before daylight, and I'm bumping these deer out of their bed because they're getting back to their bed really, really soon. But what, on the contrary to that, what I am seeing is that midday movement that we were talking about, even here in the South. Currently I have cameras out there and I'm getting a lot of midday movement. Whether that, like y'all said, be the wind shift and whatnot, but I just think it's the moving of their bed throughout the day to set them up to go feed for the evening. That's what I'm seeing. All my major encounters I had last year with bucks were in the evening. So that's, you know, when you have a bean field or, you know, a major food source that's just there, it's kind of hard not to hunt the evening and be a big fan of the evening. So that's my two cents on that. Parker, you can touch on that if you want to. Brad, I see you're getting a little anxious over there. Let me hear it.
So I hate to throw too big of a rock out into this pond, but you brought up something that brought something to mind. So you said you bumped deer going in early in the morning, even though it's an hour and a half before shooting light, right?
Yeah.
So why do, and you're hunting, I would say you're hunting not too far from ag fields, right?
Yeah. Well, in the morning,
I just hear all the time about people don't like hunting mornings because they're bumping deer out of ag fields.
I'm bumping deer.
I don't know if that's right, but you hear people, and that's what I'm getting at. You're hunting woods. Okay. If a deer's already back to bed an hour and a half before, you know, you hear so much about people saying the deer is still out in the beans or in, you know, the beans or whatever your crop is, peanuts, whatever. They're still out there feeding in the mornings, and you're going to blow them out if you go hunt the edges of those fields. And just from my limited amount of hunting in the Midwest, even though it is the rut, when I've hunted by fields, I actually haven't seen any deer out in the fields in the mornings. I usually typically see them come out after daylight into the fields, but not as I'm walking in before daylight.
Yeah. Yeah. I didn't see it. Like the times I've been up there, I don't see them moving around much. Now, cut corn, you know, I'll see them in there a little more than beans. But yeah, I mean, if I'm walking up on them in their bed, you know, jumping them out that early, you know, my plan is to either get in there just a little bit later, and set up a little, you know, not as close to them and try to get them in that, you know, mid morning feeding pattern. That's kind of my tactic going in, but as Parker said earlier, persimmon trees. You hear a lot about persimmons. I mean, if you go up there and you listed the number of food sources they could eat right now, whether it be bedding in the corn, eating in the corn, eating in the beans, bedding in the beans, eating browse, persimmons, there is a lot of different food sources that you can get on in the early season. Last year, I did the whole bean thing where you sit on a bean field and you wait for your TV show to start recording, and it just didn't happen for me. They would always stage up late, about 100 yards in the woods, and then they would come out right at dark. So I'm going with a different tactic this year. I'm going away from the pressure of the beans. I'm going to more persimmon trees, and that's what I'm seeing on my cameras is these deer are using them at all times of the day. There's no particular pattern right now. So as we close in with, you know, less than a month to get there, I'm waiting to see these shifts. And that's another thing that you could go on rant about is these mini shifts in summertime, what these deer are doing, because these cameras I have, I know they don't see, you know, all the woods, but there's definitely been a change in movement from back in June to now. And y'all may have some opinions on that, but that's just kind of where I'm at.
I want to know how many times we can say shift in one podcast.
I'm just glad that the word shift recently sounded like shift. And I could hear the F. Because earlier I thought Brett was just cussing, but then I realized what was going on there for a second.
Wait, they're going to just have to put the explicit marker on this one.
It's already on. It's on the podcast as a whole.
These guys are out of control. And they really only like that one word.
If you get Pat, if you get Pat on the podcast, you might as well just mark it all as explicit because it don't matter at that point.
No, Matt, I have seen the exact same thing. I've also seen the exact opposite in Kentucky where there's farmland. I've seen guys who are probably going to be considered the least likely in your group to kill a deer, and they go and sit a stupid, dumb edge of a bean field, and they kill the biggest buck of the week. I've seen that happen. I've talked about it on Southern Ground a lot, too. Like, it just... A lot of times it feels like there's no rhyme or reason for the success, the early season success. Obviously, with guys like Jake Bush, he's going in and, you know, he's like being very meticulous about his movements and he's doing it on purpose. But for these out of state hunts, I feel like there's a couple things that happen. For you, Matt, you're going to be really aggressive in that week, right? You've got a week or a long weekend basically to do it, right? So you're going to be more aggressive, whereas, you know, Split Shot's talking about the spot that he's going into that's in his home area that he might not even be willing to touch, you know, in this early season. Yeah, I don't know. I'm just saying, like, most people, we're talking about blowing deer out of food sources, and so they just opt to not hunt the mornings, right? Because they don't want to risk it, where you're talking about going on an out-of-state hunt where you have a limited amount of time to make something happen, you're just naturally going to be a little more risky. And so I think there are two different approaches to what we're talking about with early season, and it is the aggressive one and the safe one, so you don't blow out your whole hunting spot. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
And so, you know, I think that's where your answer might be different. Than the rest of us, is because you're talking really specifically about this Kentucky trip. Now, I want to know, shift to Alabama. You like that? I used it again. Let's go transition. To Alabama.
Let's move transition to be the
transition to Alabama. Is your answer the same?
Depends on the property. I have, you know, I have my target bucks that I have kind of nailed down. I know what they're going to do. I have years of history with where they're moving. So yeah, I'm more selective on what I'm doing. And there's small parcels.
And there's
private
corn.
Land stuff.
And there's corn, which makes it evening. Like the evening makes sense.
And I've come up on it a lot with this early season going to hunt a corn pile. And when I walk in, there's five deer standing on the corn pile. And it screws the whole, you know, deer go running, blowing everywhere. That's no good for anything.
Or bedded right next to it somewhere.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. And that's, you know, I've had deer watch me walk into a spot. I had a spot on National Forest where I had a deer. He'd show up 2 o'clock, 4 o'clock in the daylight. I mean, I was right there in his home, but he was bedded there watching my access, knew when I came in. And there was no killing that buck unless I changed something. And I, at the time, was not willing to change to try to kill this deer. I just thought, hey, if I go in here enough times, he'll mess up eventually.
He's going to get smarter.
I just want to point out that we mentioned corn piles one time, and the Marion County person on the panel immediately raised his hand. What you got there, Split Shot?
Well, he was talking about getting in. Shift. And transition.
Yeah.
He was talking about getting in. With these deer being so close to whatever food source they're on, like down here, like you might see them lay up underneath the muscadine vine or something. They'll lay right up underneath it if it's hot, and they'll get up underneath the vines and the shade. And even if it's out kind of in the open because they're under those vines, it's cool. But what you can do to get in is hunt the evening. So I would prefer the evening ideally, especially if you know what food source they're going to, but go in early instead of waiting till like an hour before dark. And I know that's, you got to hunt when you can hunt, but if you can get in there at 2 o'clock and it's going to get dark at 8, then try to get in there early, like around that 2 o'clock point. That way you can get in quietly. You're going to have, like I was saying, the wind's going to be moving around more in the middle of the day. So it gives you some noise cover to be able to slip in close to the bedding area. You have a more consistent wind at that point in time. And you don't have to, like, you can predict where your thermals are going to drop in the evening, especially if you're in a hammock place. They're going to be dropping down towards a lower point. So you can kind of predict a way to get in there quietly if you just get in there earlier. I think a lot of guys try to walk in there at, you know, 5 o'clock. And, you know, if it's getting dark at 7 and they're just getting in there just a little bit too late instead of trying to get in there early. I think a lot of hunters get hung up on trying to hunt traditionally, and maybe you give up a morning for a place that you can get in early, just rest up and go in there when you know it's going to be, you can get in quietly and cleanly whenever that deer is going to be bedded down and not at that food source so heavily.
I would agree.
I think, yeah. And a lot of people don't want to get in early seasoning because it's hot, but you've got to be willing to do that, man.
Didn't bother the deer.
I can tell you, I have seen, like, in Georgia when I was living there and hunting there, I would see so many, and this was a heavily piney place. Like, we had like one little section of hardwoods, but for the most part it was pines. And through those pines in the month of October, and it's a traditional November rut there, maybe a little later in November, but it's usually November and October, those deer moving all hours of the day through those pines, all hours of the day. I mean, it was crazy. Now, that's the only place I've really hunted that was like all pines like that, but it really taught me a lot. Like, obviously I believe that these were not open pines. They were all pretty dense understory in them, but you would find deer moving through there all times of day. And it goes back into what Brett has talked about in Missouri, hunting those CRP thickets. I think if there's cover, I do believe that deer are primarily nocturnal, but I also think they're paranoid too, and so I think that they move around constantly when they have the right cover, when they feel comfortable. I do believe that they will move around at all hours of the day, and so to answer that question, if you've got that and you can figure that out and you're willing to do that, I don't think that there's a right or wrong answer to the question.
So Brett is morning.
You're only,
sorry, thought you were done.
You're good. Yeah, you're good.
So Brett was morning. Matt was wishy-washy. Morning if he's in the Midwest, and or
Kentucky. Evening.
Oh, evening. Midwest. Oh, my apologies. So is it morning in Alabama?
Yeah, it's morning in Alabama.
Wow, I must have been just completely out of my mind, because I swear it was the other way around.
You playing with them arrows?
Hey,
Walt's playing with his shaft over there.
Yeah, I was going to make the joke, but you said keep it clean, Parker. Split shot. What's your final answer? Morning or evening, sir?
I'll say ideally, I would say evening, just because you can get in clean and closer into the bedding area.
Okay. I'm gonna throw my hat into the arena and say mornings, but with the explanation that I hunt a lot of swamps, I just gravitate to water, and I feel like deer in the swamps. What, Parker?
I was gonna say, you said I hunt a lot of, and I was gonna say roadkill.
I specifically target cripples that are like a mile away from where they got hit too. That's the craziest thing about that whole daggum story.
Still need my claim money.
Your deductible.
Brett usually hits his deer in the morning for him.
Brett, it depends Brett's on when Brett's hunting.
Yeah, I was about to say. Yeah. But outside of when I'm hunting the cripples, I like mornings in the swamp. I don't know what it is, but it feels like whenever I'm hunting good Tupelo swamps or an oak hammock in the middle of a swamp, I seem to get way more activity consistently early season between about 7 a.m. and about 10:45. My theory on that is I think the deer are up in the more high areas right up until daylight, where they're a little more exposed, and the areas that I'm hunting tend to be a little deeper. And so what I think happens is I end up catching them pretty close to their bedding areas. I never feel confident that I have their bedding areas dialed in, because the South is just this thick enigma of never being able to know where they are specifically. But if I go deep into a swamp and I can find like a water oak or a live oak trickling some acorns early season, I feel pretty confident in the morning I can get back in there, get in there pretty quiet. I always feel like I'm ahead of the deer a couple hours too. So I don't know why. I just feel like I'm not blowing deer out. And I'll sit there. I'll darn near go to sleep until about 7 o'clock. I mean, every once in a while I'll hear a deer early, but it feels like it's about 8:45 to 9:45 is my prime time in those swamps. What you got, Parker?
All right, Walt. So I'm going to ask you this question. I think I know your answer already, but I want to know, in the early season, and this is not meant to be an insulting question, but has there been a time when early season has been about hunting a mature deer for you? Or has it been about where can I go to kill a doe, or any deer possible?
Well, not around here. Well, it's weird. So in Southeast Georgia, it was a lot about killing older deer. But the rut also was late September, early October. So, you know, your season starts the first week of October. You only got about 2-3 weeks, and then you're hunting rut activity. So that's, I'm going to kind of throw that out. Until last year, the year before, when Brett started running over my deer, I started shifting more towards trying to catch those deer deep, a more mature deer deep. But I would say more often than not, early season for me is about filling the freezer.
Okay. So, and I ask you that, I mean, anybody who knows me knows it's the same thing for me here in Alabama. The difference is I'm kind of structuring my answers around bucks for some of the early season hunts that I've done in other places. When I'm here in Alabama, for the most part, early season, let's go freaking kill some does. Now, last year I killed a bunch early, like super quick. And so I actually did do a lot more early season, like really trying to figure a buck out. And, but I asked that question because it really does matter.
Definitely.
I think in the conversation, you know, in my opinion, there is not a better time or opportunity to go kill does. I see so many less does once the rut picks up, and so many so few of them actually would give me a shot opportunity because they're always flipping, running, and prancing around during the rut. During early season, if you're looking for a place to fill a doe tag, man, I don't think there's a better time. I say the only answer is morning or evening, find the acorns and you will be successful.
I will say this, though. If you line up all the deer I shot going back to Southeast Georgia, all six of them, what you will see is I was wildly more successful on bucks during archery season.
Yep.
And that's with the same strategies. So whether I was like really targeting them or not, I mean, obviously I wasn't. But I have always found in the hot months in the swamps to be my best time. Maybe it's just because I feel like I naturally gravitate to it there. So there's a confidence there. So I hunt them more. But give me ankle to knee deep water, a persimmon or an oak dropping in a swamp, and I just feel like you give me a couple weeks in our early archery season with some hot weather, mornings are going to be more productive for me. I mean, my first archery kill was on a hot feed tree, persimmon on the side of a swamp. My biggest bow buck before I shot that one, which was a really nice little, I don't know, maybe 60-inch coastal whitetail deer. I shot him over a water oak dropping in a swamp. I shot several spikes and forkies. I'm not claiming to be a big buck hunter, but most of my bucks until very recently were all early season deer until I moved to Florida, honestly. So
good. I think, you know, to what you're saying, we've talked to Warren Womack a lot, in the past on our other podcast. I think, have you ever had him on Chasing
Oh
Tales?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So, Warren Womack is known for his quantity of deer, right? Like he kills a bunch of deer. And, but if you notice, if you follow him on Instagram, he'll post the memories or whatever. He'll like every day he's got a new deer post of memories. And there's a lot of bigger bucks that are mixed in that. I think you find a hot feed tree and you really, you know, I mean, like there is the chance that any deer could potentially come in there and eat from it. Hot feed tree in the right spot. I mean, he's killed his fair share of big bucks in the early season on a hot food source. I think you do it enough and eventually it'll fall in your lap. Man, I think that's a great conversation. Like it really gets me thinking about like, you know, like y'all's different answers has really got me thinking about, you know, I'm going to be traveling and doing a lot of different states and there's going to be new approaches to each of those states. And, you know, just speaking selfishly, I think, this is probably going to be one that I go back and listen to just to hear the different unique approaches to this early season thing, which is, in my opinion, one of the hardest times of year to kill them.
I think if I'm making a request of the listener, I think what you're going to find if you listen to this podcast long enough is there's more than one way to skin a cat, and you need to go into the woods with the flexibility knowing, or you go into the woods with the flexibility that you don't have a game plan per se that is set in stone, and you let the woods tell you what the woods are wanting to tell you. You let the feed trees tell you, you know, you can't hunt hot feed trees if they're not there. So if you spend your entire weekend walking around looking for hot feed trees and there's just none there, it's time to move on to a different food source. It's time to do something different. You know, what you heard was a plethora of different answers based on a variety of situations. And I hope that'll give you like a playbook that you can really use to leverage and don't get mentally stuck to one idea. I'm really prone to that. I really get honed in on a thermal hub or a hot feed tree or fill in the blank and I lose the forest for the trees. So Split Shot, you got any closing thoughts?
Yeah, just to add on what you're saying, when I started to hunt less traditionally and to go into more situationally, and that just comes with experience, is to be able to, hey, I've been in this situation before. I made this mistake. Well, now I can adjust. When I started to hunt more like that, and, you know, where I was talking about coming in during the middle of the day and sitting longer, or maybe I have to wait in the mornings because the thermals are dropping real hard in the swamp, so I don't go in there as early. When I started to hunt more like that, I started having a lot more success. And like you were just saying, you have to be able to adapt to the woods and what's around you. And the way that you learn how to adapt is just to spend more time out in the woods. If that's in summertime scouting, if it's out postseason, spend as much time out in the outdoors and really just pay attention to what's going on. Be focused more on the little details and you will have a lot more encounters and much more success because you understand the bigger picture of what's going on and you're ready for those situations when they happen.
Well, let's transition to the housekeeping then.
Yeah, let's shift there real fast. No, man. So just wanted to say thanks to our partners over at Join or Die Knives. Man, dude, you want to talk about a good knife that's got some solid quality craftsmanship? You need to check out Join or Die Knives, and you can use the code SGHUNT at checkout, and that will save you 10%. We've got to get that changed, but
we do.
we got to give people the offering. Yeah. You can use that code though, and it'll save you 10% just for a little bit until we get it changed over to Southern Collective. But then of course, Bowtech been shooting the crap out of that Bowtech Carbon 1 the last few days. And I don't know if you guys noticed or not, but me and Pablo went and shot yesterday. We went and shot bows at the archery range.
Boxing too.
Yeah. Well, Pablo was shooting a Matthews. See, that was the problem, is Pablo was shooting a Matthews and it was prematurely firing the arrow. I'm just kidding. Pablo bumped his release right when I started filming. But dude, getting that thing dialed in, man, it is I feel like my system, I told you guys, I've been getting fired up all week because I finally feel like this issue with target panic and my form and all that stuff, I feel like it's all coming together. and I'm pretty fired up about it. So with that, Walt, I am officially done, fellas. I'm going to see you guys on the fire this week, I'm sure. So I got to tell you bye. But for everybody else, Walt, you want to tell them where they, if they want to join this fire, tell them where you can join it.
Yeah, we make your life really easy. Swipe up wherever you're listening. Swipe up. Look at the show notes. We got a link to Patreon. We got a link to our store, and we got a link to all of our social media. So if you want to go support the show, buy a hat, if you want to buy a shirt, buy a hoodie, go check out the website. We'd love to have you guys over there. That money goes right back into out-of-state tags, gas money. And if you want to be part of the best digital deer camp, definitely check out Patreon. We'd love to have you over there. That thing is bumping right now. So until next time, y'all throw a log in the fire, go to sleep.